Removing plastics from our lives. Is it possible? Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Plastics are in so many of our products. Cities are passing plastic bans like on straws and bags. But is that enough? And should the government force us to change, or should it be on us as individuals? Plus, the 2019 legislative session is underway. What are the top issues for lawmakers? Where might there be the greatest conflict between the legislature and the governor? We'll get an update from Tallahassee. Finally, we're about to enter spring, and that means termite mating season. There are a few breeds that are causing homeowners great pains, and it's not just homes, but trees that are at risk. We'll learn about those breeds and the best practices for getting rid of the termites. All of that today on Sundial. First, the news. Welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez.
Be bold in championing economic opportunity. Be bold in protecting Florida's environment. Be bold in improving education. Be bold in defending the safety of our communities. Be bold because while perfection is not attainable, if we aim high, we can achieve excellence.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis delivering his State of the State address as the Florida legislature began its session on Tuesday. DeSantis discussed his commitments to the environment and economic growth, but also controversial issues like banning sanctuary cities and abortion restrictions. Elizabeth Coe, staff writer in the Miami Herald, Tampa Bay Times, Tallahassee Bureau, joins us now following this session. Elizabeth, always great to have you.
Hi, thanks for having me. Always appreciate being on.
So what did you hear from House and Senate leaders about what they heard from the governor in his State of the State?
So both House Speaker Jose Oliva and Senate President Bill Galvano had some remarks to say before the governor delivered his State of the State speech. But so far, both legislative leaders and the new governor are talking pretty positively about each other, right? The governor had a speech that appealed pretty strongly to the base that helped elect him in the last election. And both leaders are saying, you know, they're eager to work with the governor. They're eager to hear his proposals. And as the session's getting started, everyone's getting along fairly well.
You know, Republicans had a lot of conflict with former Governor Rick Scott. But do you sense that the attitude of the House and Senate Republicans is a little different, very different with Governor DeSantis?
I think it is, and I think that's for a couple of reasons. One is I think it's a little too early to tell exactly where a lot of those flashpoints are going to be. We have to remember that Governor DeSantis has only been in this position for less than 2 months, so sometimes up here it feels like a little bit longer. I think rank-and-file Republicans are still kind of trying to get a read on DeSantis, who was in Washington in Congress before he came to Tallahassee after winning the election. So I think House and Senate Republicans are still trying to feel the new governor out and understand exactly how he's going to interact with the legislature as the session moves forward.
All right, let's start with House Speaker Republican Jose Oliva from Miami Lakes. What is his biggest goal? What is he going after this time?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm here. Go ahead. We hear you.
Oh, okay. I think you were asking about your priorities, right?
House Speaker Jose Oliva, what are his biggest priorities?
It's basically healthcare deregulation. He likes to talk pretty regularly about how the fraction the state has spent on healthcare has dramatically risen since he was elected in 2011, and he's pushed a number of priorities here that would regulate the market to do that. So
right.
Lessening the limit the state has on new healthcare facilities, expanding practice, telehealth, et cetera.
All right. I apologize, Elizabeth. I think we're having a little bit of a connection problem. We're going to try to reconnect with you here in just a second. Again, I'm talking with Elizabeth Coe, staff writer for the Miami Herald and Tampa Bay Times, based in Tallahassee. We're talking about some of the priorities that this legislature is going to be dealing with in this upcoming session. Again, the session started yesterday, and we were talking about Governor DeSantis' State of the State address. And I believe that we do have Elizabeth back. Elizabeth, are you there? Okay, so we're going to go by phone here. So let's go back real quickly because I didn't catch all of your answer, but as we talk about House Speaker Republican Jose Oliva, again, what are his one or two big priorities for this session?
He's talking about healthcare deregulation, and he's proposed a number of priorities like lessening the limits the state has on building new healthcare facilities and expanding telehealth, allowing physicians to treat patients through teleconference and things like that. expanding scope of practice for nurse practitioners, and generally more free market policies within the healthcare market.
And then you have Senate President Bill Galvano, the Bradenton Republican, a bit of a different perspective yesterday, but what is he telling the Senate about his priorities?
Not really, actually. So the Senate kind of historically has been a more member-centric chamber, for lack of a better phrase. The House has usually been a lot more top-down, where the House Speaker has outlined a slate of priorities and a bigger agenda. But Galvano said yesterday he's willing to have members take the lead, didn't have a lot of priorities specifically to share. He's trying to have individual senators lead policy proposals and suggest what they'd like to see in the legislature this year.
So one of the big issues that has come up, and it's an issue that comes up every session, but there is a feeling that perhaps with the change in the court and a different governor, that maybe now is the time to talk about abortion. There are two bills right now, House Bill 235 and Senate Bill 792, both of these basically looking at the fetal heartbeat, as that's really the big part of this. But tell us briefly about these two bills and the conversations right now about them.
So you're right that a lot of the conversation around these bills and around abortion this year in the legislature has centered on what some sponsors and supporters are saying is a big judicial sea change. There are three new justices on the state Supreme Court. There are a number of new conservative justices on the federal Supreme Court, and they're hoping that that would help overturn federal decisions like Roe v. Wade, the state decision that protects the right to privacy that kind of holds similar thresholds for abortions in place. And the bills that you mentioned would ban abortions with some exceptions once a fetal heartbeat detected, which could be as early as 6 weeks. Now, those bills have been referred to committees, but hearings haven't yet been scheduled for them, so it's too early to say that those bills are likely to move. And like you noted, this is an issue that's run into a lot of opposition and a lot of stalemates in the past.
Yeah. Let's talk about school safety. This was a central issue last year because of the Parkland shooting. But what are lawmakers talking about now when it comes to school safety?
A lot of that conversation is being driven by the Parkland Commission that's been meeting for the last year and made a number of recommendations not too long ago. When Governor DeSantis was addressing the legislature yesterday, he urged lawmakers to take up those commission's recommendations. And chief among them is a pretty controversial proposal that would allow arming educators. That was something that was discussed last year when the Parkland legislation was being hashed out and eventually passed, but it was removed from the compromise bill before it got through the legislature last year.
Again, talking with Elizabeth Koh, staff writer for the Miami Herald, Tampa Bay Times, based in Tallahassee, we are talking about the legislative session, which started yesterday. Elizabeth, is there any conversation about guns? This, again, was a big thing that was brought up because of the Parkland shooting, but is this an issue that lawmakers even want to touch this year?
It's not something that legislature has a big appetite for. President Galvano has said that he doesn't intend to try and revisit the gun restrictions that were put in place in the Parkland legislation last year. So that was raising the age limit for purchasing a rifle, and that was instituting a waiting period and things like that. There is a bill in the House that would try and roll some of those back, but so far it's only been filed. It hasn't been referred to committees. So it's not likely to move, and there's also no Senate sponsor or Senate companion bill.
All right, another issue worth noting here, a very controversial issue that we're going to get to later in the program, is a proposal that would put a 5-year ban on cities from banning plastic straws. So, I mean, there are a number of cities down here in South Florida that have already gone down this path. But help us understand how we got to this point, as cities across South Florida are trying to do this, and now there's a push to keep cities from having that ability.
So you're right in noting that this has been an issue in South Florida. Coral Gables had this come up not too long ago, and it actually drew a lawsuit from the Florida Retail Federation chain. But on Monday, there was a bill that was heard in the Senate committee that actually started as a bill that would target plastic straw use. But by the time the Senate committee hearing ended, the sponsor had added an amendment that basically banned bans on plastic straws and called for a study that would look at the effects of plastic straw use. And that's something that was a pretty interesting reversal from what people had gone into the hearing expecting from the legislation. So it'll be interesting to see how South Florida communities respond to that, especially given that they have tried on a local level to try and preempt plastic straw use.
So where do we see the greatest disagreement between the legislature and this governor?
I think it's a little too early to say exactly what all of those disagreements will be. An early flashpoint looks like it's going to be the budget. About a month ago, the governor rolled out his first proposal for the state budget, which was a whopping $91.3 billion. And there are a lot of reasons for the high cost of that, not least of which was hurricane recovery in the panhandle after Hurricane Michael. But Speaker Oliva, who has talked about curbing health care spending, for example, put out a statement where he said he'd like to see the state spend less. So it'll be an interesting conversation to watch the legislature and the governor talk about what that budget should look like, because if there's one thing the legislature has to do in this session, it's pass a balanced budget.
Elizabeth Coe, staff writer with the Miami Herald, Tampa Bay Times, Tallahassee Bureau, joining us from Tallahassee at the legislature. The session started yesterday. Elizabeth, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
And by the way, we want to know from you, I mean, do you follow the legislative session? Do you follow what's going on in Tallahassee? Do you follow the laws that are being pushed forward and passed? Or maybe you don't. Or maybe you don't know how things work up there. We'd love to hear from you. Find us on Facebook at WLRN Sundial or on Twitter at WLRN Sundial and let us know your thoughts. Roger from Miami follows the legislative session. He tweeted us, policies that interest me, such as public transportation, public education, affordable housing, and the environment. Tell us what's important to you. Well, still to come, spring is coming. That means termites. All of that coming up next on Sundial. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Springtime in South Florida, fast approaching. That means college students partying on the beach, the start of baseball season, and of course, you guessed it, or did you guess it? Termite breeding. Termites can pose a major problem for homeowners and for our state's urban tree canopy. There are 21 different termite breeds, but there are really only a few you need to be concerned about. There's one in particular that has our next guest very concerned, as it has the greatest potential for building and ecological damage. We welcome back our next guest, Dr. Thomas Chovanky. He is an assistant professor of urban entomology at the University of Florida in Fort Lauderdale. Dr. Chovanky, it's great to have you back.
Thank you.
All right. I always love when you come in because you bring samples. You've got all these different pieces of trees and wood and the different types of damage, but also you bring termites, so...
Yeah, I say, why not?
I will mention, too, by the way, that after the program, we're going to make a video where we're going to continue this conversation, and you're going to show us the termites. So that'll be up on our website and our social media later today. But let's distinguish between the types of termites people may have in their homes, and what are the biggest differences between drywood and subterranean?
So it's one of the biggest problem is the misidentification of termites. And when people say they have termites, they call the exterminator. And the exterminator has to make sure that they ID the termite properly. Because we have the drywood termite problem, which is the reason why we have structures that are fumigated throughout South Florida. So when you see a tent on top of a house, it's in process of being fumigated. This means they put a gas to kill everything that is inside. And the primary reason we do this is to kill drywood termites. So this termite has been there for more than 200 years. It came long ago. And it has spread throughout South Florida. So all the structures that are made out of wood, so a lot of the oldest old structures, are potentially at risk. And this is why you're going to have little drops coming out of the window frames or the baseboard. And you're going to see these little grains coming out. And this is drywood termites. And what they do is they infest a single piece of wood. The colonies are relatively small. It's just a few hundreds, maybe a thousand termites in there. They have access. They have no access to water, no access to the ground. So they're metabolically constrained. They do very small colonies, and they're going to do damage over a fairly long period of time. And what they do is not going to fall over grain. They're just going to, over wood, they're just going to chew through like this. And basically, what happened is one colony is not going to do much. I mean, one colony can do a $10 damage on a $10 piece of wood. But when you have 10, 20, 125 colonies at different pieces of wood around your house, then usually it's, as you say, it's about time to tense, basically.
So as you said, if you come home and you see there are certain little things you could see and you know this is the dry wood termite.
Yeah.
And again, it's just like it's like a small little powder almost.
Yeah. Well, grain.
A grain. It's a grain. It's a grain. Okay. Then you know that's the dry wood. That's the one you have to be
The dry wood termite.
The dry wood termite. But there's another one that we're really worried about.
So yeah, dry wood termite is a problem that concerns many people. Let's say if you have a house made out of wood in Florida, you potentially gonna have to fumigate.
By the way, every 10 years?
Yeah.
About?
Well, if you have infestations. And usually, by the way, around May, when you have all of these winged termite coming out of your house, you say, yeah, it's time to fumigate.
The winged termite.
There's no reason to treat if there's absolutely no reason to, if there's nothing happening. But usually, yeah, in South Florida, usually it's good to keep an eye on things. And if you see these pellets, these grains coming out and the winged termite coming out, say it's about time. Now, the other problem, we have subterranean termites. And we have two major species that we have to be worried about. The first one is going to be the Formosan subterranean termite. Infamous, it's distributed throughout the southeast U.S. from Florida all the way to Texas and North Carolina. And it's a big, major problem in urban areas because it does a lot of damage to structures. The other subterranean termites we have is the Asian subterranean termite. It's very similar to the Formosan. It's kind of a tropical cousin, I like to call it, because they're related, first of all, and also they have very similar niche. They infest trees and they infest structures. The problem with the Asian subterranean termite is it's only located in South Florida within the U.S., from West Palm Beach all the way to the Keys and throughout the Caribbean and Brazil. So chances, this termite's not going to be much of a problem north. It's only us in South Florida.
What does it look like?
It's hard to explain because the Formosan and the Asian subterranean termite look very similar. You need a microscope to ID them. But what you have to be concerned is the life cycle of these termites. Right now, we're entering the swarming season, which is basically when the colonies are mature, they can invest into reproduction and swarm and create these basically thousands, sometimes hundreds of thousands of winged termites flying out to basically create new colonies. These are going to be the future king and queen creating one colony. They're going to mate, create a colony, and this colony is going to be mostly going to have workers. And these are the workers that are going to chew the wood, not the others.
And so that's how you spot them, is you see the wings everywhere, wings.
You can see the wings everywhere. That's one way to know that you have termites in your area. And also, the problem with subterranean termites is they have access to the ground, and usually they attack a structure when the colony is mature. That means it's been somewhere breeding in a tree, growing from just a two termites, a king and a queen, to a million or 2-3 million workers that are here chewing and feeding the rest of the individuals. And this is basically a million mouths to feed that have access to the ground, access to water, all the resources they need, coming into a house and do a lot of damage much faster than the drywood termites would do.
So how do you get rid of them?
So that's a problem where, unfortunately, all these three species that really are economically important, they are here to stay. We're really never going to get rid of them. However, this is the new norm, and we have to adapt. So as we say, for drywood, yes, fumigation at this point is a primary way to reset the house to zero until you get infested again. For subterranean termite, it's going to be a continuous survey and pay attention to what's in your environment. First of all, if you know you're in an area at risk, it may be the time to take the good steps to prepare you for potential termite damage, because it's not do I have termites, is when will I have termites? It might just be a matter of time.
And you say, wait, area at risk, so how do you know that?
So fortunately, the past 25 years, we've been able to get samples throughout South Florida, so we have a pretty much good idea where these termites are located throughout South Florida. And we actually have a map online. If you go on our UF termite distribution map, you can see if you're in a neighborhood where the Asians or the Formosan subterranean termite are fully established. That means your structure is potentially at risk if you live in one of these neighborhoods.
And we'll share that, by the way, on our social media, WL or on Sundial. You can see it because from Palm Beach County all the way down to the end of South Florida, going into the Keys. And you have it like, you know, you show those areas like Fort Lauderdale, Miami. I see a lot of red.
Yes.
Okay.
It's unfortunate.
That's not good. And then, but again, as you said, there's two different types to watch out for because, you know, the map shows not just one species, not just, you know, that there's a problem here.
Yeah. So at this point, to go back to your initial questions about how do we deal with them, basically at this point, if you live in this neighborhood, you can be proactive and establish a program with local pest controls companies that are somewhat used to that now because this is part of their job. One primary way, there's two ways you can protect your house. The primary way that is currently used in South Florida is liquid treatment. So they drill or trench around the structure and put insecticide in the ground so termites cannot access the structure from the environment. So it's creating a chemical barrier to prevent access. Unfortunately, in the recent years, we noticed that these termites seems to be fairly clever, and we found cases where they were able to find a way around the treatment and still access the structures. This is why recently we've been advising more and more often the use of termite baits. And these baits work very differently than the liquid termiticide. The idea is termites, when they start feeding on that bait, they bring that to the rest of the colony and nobody's impacted right away. It's like a time bomb. And when the termites are ready to molt, because they're just like, you know, the crabs, they need to shed their skin, their old skin, to get the bigger one, termites do the same thing. The chemical ingredient, which is a chitin synthesis inhibitor, activates and kills the termites in the process. The incredible thing that we realize is you need less than 1 gram of active ingredient to eliminate 5 million termites.
Wow.
So it's not only more efficient to eliminate the potential damage, you actually kill the whole colony. You don't create a potential barrier where termites are going to bounce off of it and attack the next door.
They'll find another way.
Tree or house.
Right, or that. Again, talking with Dr. Thomas Chauvanke, he is an urban entomologist with the University of Florida in Fort Lauderdale. Again, talking about the fact that it's termite breeding season, and we're talking about what the risks are. And, you know, if you're seeing these, and I remember living in a house in Coral Gables, you start seeing those little wings, something to worry about, something to check on. You want to make sure that it's, you know, has the house been fumigated, or maybe it's time to call somebody. Besides homes, and this is something else that's interesting, is the damage these things can do to our trees.
So the good news, let's say.
Good news. All right, good.
The dry termites only are in houses, period. All the other termites among the 21 you mentioned earlier, most of them are just in the environment doing their thing, and it's part of a natural cycle. However, with introduction of invasive Asian subhuman termites, this one is becoming more and more problematic because we know it attacks live trees, including oak trees, gimbalimbos, royal poncianas, palm trees, including our state palm, and also the pine trees. And we noticed that if you're dealing with any hardwood trees, what it's going to do is going to basically pipe a tree from the inside and not going to do much damage to the actual living part of a tree. But we know that these trees are compromised. The structure integrity is compromised. So when we have storms coming in, these trees can collapse and create additional damage to structures because these trees basically fall on houses or properties.
And you brought this up when, you know, last time we talked, a while back. It was after Irma, and we had seen trees that had collapsed, and we thought, well, hurricanes knock trees over. But then we found out in some of these trees had been damaged, as you said, internally by these termites, making them very weak.
Yes. So that's one of the concerns in these areas where these termites population have been established for long, more than 20 years. Now, a vast majority of these trees are basically chewed from the inside. So if we have a direct hit from a hurricane, then it's a big concern. And the idea is if we can detect these termites from the mud tubes, or basically sometimes you can basically see them swarm out of a tree, you know that tree is infested. Killing the colony as fast as possible will save a tree down the road.
And this happened to you. One of the trees in your house, right?
Actually, in my neighbor's house, yeah. So two things happened. One was a oak tree that basically just bloomed open like a flower during the Irma. The other thing that happened is with pine trees. And what we know about pine trees is it's so hard in the inside that they actually don't pipe trees. Instead, they're staying on the outside of a tree, just underneath the bark, and they're damaging the live tissue. So what happened over the years, they're basically girdling the trees. And when you start looking around, you see a lot of these dead pine trees that were perfectly alive just a few months ago. Chances some of them actually have been killed actively by these termites. So these invasive termites has really two impacts. One's going to be the structural impact, which is economic to us. But in addition to this, they also are a direct threat to the urban canopy within South Florida.
We did get a question from one of our listeners online talking about what kind of risk is there to, when you talk about like apartments and condominiums, is there any risk at all? Or is this, you know, really we're talking about homeowners, homes that have a lot of wood?
I would say structurally, yeah, wood houses that are made out of wood, the structure, most of the time is going to be the old structure with neighborhoods that have been here for quite some time and are made out of wood. These are the most at risk because the 2x4s, they will chew through that eventually if you give them a chance. And actually, within my own neighborhood, within the past 3 years, two structures that were built in the 50s had to be taken down because the structure was gone. So a homeowner bought a house and wanted to move in and realized that the structure was not sound anymore. So they had to destroy the house and rebuild on top of it, which cost them about $350,000 more than expected. So it has a toll, you know, and the problem is it's going to be one house at a time within neighborhoods, so it's not always visible. But as this termite is going to be more and more present in some of his neighborhoods, it's going to be more structures and more trees potentially at risk.
All right. You're sticking around because after the show, we're going to do a video and talk a little bit more about this. But you, like I said, you brought termites with you. So we'll get to see what they look like, what to look for. And then, of course, you know, we'll see those maps and where the areas of greatest risk are, but also where people can go, because if they find any, if they have any samples, they could actually send it to you.
Absolutely. And right now is the best time for Asians because they're swarming all throughout last week. Now, we have a little cold front, so they're going to stay a little bit cozy in trees and structures.
The subterranean
but
Asian.
As soon as the warmth comes back, like by the end of the week, look out there at dusk time when the sun is going down and you see all of these flying things. That means they're Asian subterranean termites.
Oh, boy. Dr. Thomas Chauvenc, again, urban entomologist with the University of Florida in Fort Lauderdale, talking about termites, and my skin is crawling a little bit. Dr. Chauvenc, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
All right, still to come, can you live a plastic-free life? Is it up to you, or should the government legislate that? That's coming up next on Sundial. Hello and welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez.
I just want to say one word to you. Just one word.
Yes, sir.
Are you listening?
Yes, I am.
Plastics.
Exactly. How do you mean?
There's a great future in plastics. Think about it.
And that is the famous line from the 1967 film, The Graduate, featuring Dustin Hoffman. How prophetic that line was. Plastics are now such a massive part of our lives and our ecosystems that many are now trying to find ways to get rid of them. Numerous cities around Florida have proposed or passed laws that put bans on certain plastic items, mostly straws and plastic bags. And some of them include Coral Gables, Delray Beach, Fort Lauderdale, just to name a few. That's created pushback, by the way, from lawmakers in Tallahassee. As we mentioned earlier, two bills are now in committee that would put a moratorium on bans. They want to ban the bans. Now, we've been asking you, how are you reducing plastics in your life, if you are? And we've heard this from you.
Hi, my name is Janet Carabelli. I am very, very committed to reducing the amount of plastic used. I participate in river cleanups occasionally. I just got off an 11-minute call encouraging Publix to please stop using plastic bags, or at the very least, to train their cashiers not to unnecessarily double bag or to put things in bags that are easier carried without them, like a 6-pack of bottles.
We also heard from Marie Menel-Bell from Fort Lauderdale. She sent us this message: recycle everything I can. Pick up styrofoam and plastics and trash every day on the streets. When I walk my dog, recycle styrofoam at Publix. Use bamboo ware instead of plastic ware when away from home and traveling. So are you trying to live a plastic-free life? What changes have you made to accomplish that? Is it hard, or can you do it? If you live in Coral Gables, Delray Beach, Fort Lauderdale, any of these cities that have a ban, we'd love to hear from you. How is it working? How do you feel about that? 800-743-9576. That's 800-743-9576. I'm joined now in studio by Coral Gables Vice Mayor Vince Lago and also local environmentalist Andrew Otazo. And he's, by the way, he's been cleaning up a lot of plastic pollution in Biscayne Bay, and he's got an interesting story to share as well. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being here today. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
It's an honor to be here.
You know what? I want to start with this. You know, we start with a question. In order to get plastics out of our lives, should we depend on the government to do that? Or should that be a personal responsibility? Mr. Lago, let me start with you.
Well, first off, thank you for having me. It's always an honor. It's a great ability for me to put a face to the voice that I hear every single day while I drive. Do I believe that government? I believe in limited government. But in instances like we had to take in reference to the banning of polystyrene and plastic bags, we needed to take a drastic measure because we were being banned by the state of Florida. I'm a big proponent of the home rule, and I think that we should be able to engage the residents and legislate on behalf of those residents that we deal on a daily basis. I think sometimes in government we need to take measures that will leave a lasting effect, like we're having currently with the plastic bag and polystyrene ordinance.
So let's go back real quickly to when the city was even considering this. How did that conversation start, and did everybody buy in right away?
So let me tell you what we did. I wanted to make sure that we brought everyone to the table. We met with Mark Trowbridge in reference to the Coral Gables community. We met with the Business Improvement District, and we sat down with the businesses, and we stated what our intent was in regards to the polystyrene and plastic ban.
And the polystyrene, by the way, that's like the styrofoam containers.
It's the scientific name for styrofoam.
Right, okay.
So we met with the businesses, and we explained what an important effect this was for a city like Coral Gables. We have 40 miles of coastline. We have beautiful mangroves, beautiful beaches, and we're seeing that we're being inundated with expanded polystyrene and plastic bags, which were becoming a nuisance and a hazard to our wildlife. So I decided, after meeting with the businesses and explaining to them, that we would set forth on a goal of eliminating all polystyrene and all plastic bag uses, not only in public, but in the private sector, in the restaurants, in the businesses. We were met with open arms. I was surprised. Being a Republican, I'm not a big fan of banning anything, but I'm an environmentalist at heart. I grew up skin diving. I grew up spearfishing in South Florida, grew up in Homestead. I understand the importance of saving and making sure that we leave something for the future.
You know, he talked about the coastlines and the mangroves, and he talked about, you know, where a lot of this trash ends up. And Andrew, you see it.
Yes.
You're there. You're cleaning it up.
I was there 2 days ago.
Your thoughts on the idea of, should it be just a personal responsibility that I should pick up and stop? Well, first of all, not put trash out, you know, put trash where it belongs, but that I should ban certain things in my life? Or should we have cities like Coral Gables say, we're going to ban some of these products because they're ending up in the mangroves?
It's a multi-pronged approach that you need to take. And I applaud the vice mayor and his administration for everything that they've done in Coral Gables. But it needs to include everything from, again, personal responsibility, you yourself going to the beach and not, you know, throwing your trash in the ocean or just leaving it on the sand, as well within your daily life, you know, going to Publix, not double bagging, or, you know, buying recyclable materials at the very least and actually then recycling it, but also at the city level, the municipal level, at the county level, at the state level, but also bringing in local businesses. So you talk to them individually. Many of them are on their own volition are taking on these full or partial bans of plastic products, and that's what's necessary. And again, I can compliment what the vice mayor has been saying on the ground, because I picked up to date 3.5 tons of exclusively plastics, you know, from the mangroves.
What got you into that? Why did you want to start doing? When did you start doing it? But why?
You can talk about it at an academic level that we have this just massive problem in South Florida of plastics washing ashore, whether it be in the mangroves or other shorelines. But I saw it. I love the mangroves. I mean, it is an incredibly beautiful, rich, diverse place where you see an incredible variety of plant and animal life. And I would go in there and it was just breathtaking. But then you'd look around and every square foot had trash on it.
What do you usually see?
Anything and everything humans produce. Anything. Car parts. Luggage. I found a body bag. Syringes. Clothes. Plastic bottles. Plastic bags. Straws, of course. Pens. I mean, furniture. I took out a 200-pound boat a couple months ago. Last week, I took out the side of... It must have been a yacht that weighed 200 pounds from Louisiana. So anything... Everything you can possibly imagine. Yesterday, I was out in the ocean. I took out 150 pounds of rope that had gotten caught up in some probably lobster trap weights out there. So everything you can imagine winds up out there. And a lot of it is local. A lot of it I can tell, oh, here's a bag from, you know, Publix, or here's a cup from, you know, a bar that I know in Wynwood. And again, some of it is coming up from offshore, boats that have just dumped their material, or anglers that just leave their equipment behind. And some of it comes from international waters as well.
That is amazing, the things that you have just listed. Again, the number 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN. We'd like to hear from you if you are trying to live a plastic-free life. How is that possible? Can you do it? Have you done it? What would you advise people on how to do it? But also your thoughts. Should government be legislating this out of our lives, or is it a personal responsibility? 1-800-743-9576. You know, Mr. Lago, the other thing, too, as I mentioned at the beginning, is that now there are a couple of bills in Tallahassee. They want to ban the bans. They don't want the home rule. They don't want cities like Coral Gables doing this. They want it to leave that up in Tallahassee. Your thoughts on these bills. Have you talked to anybody in Tallahassee about this?
No, I haven't had the pleasure of talking to them, but I think it's absolutely ridiculous. You're talking about elected officials who are here locally, who are one of the 34 cities that are comprised in Miami-Dade County, and it's our responsibility on a daily basis to deal with our residents, not the individuals that are in Tallahassee, either in the State House or in the Senate. We are responsible. We are on the ground. I am talking to the residents every single day who are telling me that this is an exceptional idea. Let me give you an example how we've changed from just banning. The ban needed to happen because we were being bullied by lobbyists and state officials who were not willing to take a step forward in cleaning up our beaches. What my colleague today on this panel is mentioning is commendable. It all starts with individuals like himself who are doing the right thing on behalf of young ladies like my daughters who are 7 and 4 years old, who are the future of this community. We needed to take a drastic measure. But you see, we're not all about banning. What we do now is when we're moving forward in the direction of straws, we didn't ban it. What we're doing is we're incentivizing it via tax reductions to the businesses. But we don't even need to do that because you're seeing a progression as residents and business people who are visiting the businesses and the restaurants. They're stating, hey, listen, why are you offering plastic straws? Why aren't you offering an alternative that's more environmentally sensitive?
Yeah, you said everybody bought in, but I want to let's look at the business side of this real quickly. Is, you know, some businesses, you know, like restaurants, the food industry, depend on plastics, plastic bags, like the supermarkets, or when they have delivery and takeout, they had the styrofoam containers for the food, straws especially. But did you get any pushback at all? And because I want to know, how's this, if I'm that small business owner, you're telling me I've got to make some changes, and maybe it's a little more costly if I make those changes.
And I'll tell you what we were. We were not heavy-handed. We gave everyone 1 year to use of their existing stock. So it wasn't from one day to the next.
You didn't have to change right away.
At all. We had an extensive educational campaign before we started with the ban. We also made exceptions. You know, for example, in Publix, you're allowed to have styrofoam for your meat products, which comes in underneath the meat.
Right.
But we told them, it's time to get rid of the plastic bags. We had a little bit of pushback from Publix. They did their lobbying efforts. But at the end of the day, they've complied. And they know that Coral Gables, the residents that they depend on, for their business model, are every day when you step into a restaurant, every day when you step into Publix, make sure you ask for that manager and you tell them, listen, I appreciate what you're doing in regards to the environment. I appreciate you for stepping up. That is what we need as a community, and it's happening in Coral Gables.
You know what? Before we go to the phones, Andrew, you're out there. You're doing the cleanup. You've taken on the initiative. Other people like you, and there are groups that are doing this. Does the government help out at all? Does the government have a program for cleaning up, or do they give any assistance?
Clean Streets Miami has a program where they'll hand out small grants. This is a relatively new development. That's at the county level. But other than that, not really. It's mostly just people on their own doing it. There are plenty of people in like Manny Riondo in Key Biscayne, or Frankie Ruiz, who runs the Miami Marathon, who does it, does plogging and does other cleanup efforts for Miami Waterkeeper. They're a great organization that does it as well. But I do want to talk about something that the vice mayor started speaking about, and that is what I do, which is going out of the mangroves and cleaning up the trash. Once you get to that point, you've lost. You have to go. I do this because it's a labor of love, but you need to go as far upstream as possible. So you need to go directly to the businesses and the consumers for them to reduce their own plastic use, because, again, everything that we produce, everything that we use, winds up in the ocean, and that winds up in the mangroves, and then I clean it up. And every single high tide, there's new material without fail, every single high tide.
That's going to be frustrating. You're cleaning up and just more's coming.
Yes.
Let's go to the phones. I want to start with Martha in Miami. Martha, thank you so much for waiting, and welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you, and thanks to Vince and to Andrew for what they're doing. I'm in unincorporated Miami-Dade County. I recycle my blue bin. I take number fives to Whole Foods. I take batteries to Home Depot. I take plastic bags back. But my problem is with the Miami-Dade County recycling program. They do not educate people that plastic bags can't go in the blue bins. They send out these complicated flyers, number one. Number two, All of these consumers go in grocery stores and happily buy fruits and vegetables in clear plastic clamshell containers that have a number one on them, but Miami-Dade County has never recycled those. Why can't Miami-Dade County recycle those, and why can't they educate people not to put plastic bags in the blue bins?
Martha, thank you so much for that call. That's an interesting question. And you know what, Mr. Lago, real quickly, let me ask you about recycling. I'm glad she brought that up. And do you think that we're doing enough recycling? And is that on, again, the government or on people? Are they recycling enough?
Well, I think we all have a personal responsibility in regards to recycling. In reference to my two daughters, I take a lot of great pride. I've taught them from a very young age. I mean, they take plastic home with them and they put it in the recycling bin. They take a piece of glass. I want to commend Martha for her efforts. And listen, it's not going unnoticed. I also take back plastic bags to Publix. And I make sure that those, even styrofoam cartons from eggs, you can do that also. If we're going to talk about Miami-Dade County, we could be talking for hours in regards to the flaws.
Well, we don't have them here.
We don't have them here, and I want to obviously, be courteous to them. But what you need to do is exactly what this gentleman sitting on the panel today is doing. You need to hold your elected officials accountable at all levels, starting at the local, all the way up to state, up to the federal government. You need to write them. You need to tell them that their behavior is unacceptable, that they need to take a stand in regards to environmental stewardship. And I could talk about the things that I do personally. My house runs 100% on solar. I pay $9.35 a month for my electric bill. I drive 100% electric car. We do a lot of things in my house that other people don't do. And you got to take a stand. This is not Republican versus Democrats. This is a nonpartisan issue. This is a South Florida
Agreed.
Issue.
100%.
All right, let me go back to the phones real quickly here. I've got a lot of calls that are coming in. I'm going to start with Robert in Boca Raton. Robert, thanks so much.
Yes, my question is, how about alternatives such as, if you go in some stores, they have, they'll give you paper bags. Some, Trader Joe's will give you two. Is that worse or better? What are some alternatives?
All right, alternatives. All right, so, yeah, I mean, I got to tell you something. I haven't seen paper bags in a long time, but I'm going to one store in particular. But, I mean, what are the alternatives? Take your own bag.
Take
right?
your own bag.
Bring your own canvas bag.
Yeah. How many people, by the way, do you know who are doing this?
A lot. A lot.
Yeah.
I have a lot of individuals that come to see me at the city that say, we at the city have handed out thousands of canvas bags with the city logo on it. We do events every single year where we basically give them away. And you're seeing more and more people coming to Publix, going to restaurants, using those bags throughout the city and throughout Miami-Dade County. Just bring a bag. There's no need to be so wasteful.
Mm-hmm. I will say this, and I'm not condemning or condoning any particular store. I tend to shop at a Publix. It's next to me. They actually do sell bags. You could buy the bags. I bought them. I've just had to get into the habit of keeping it in my car.
Right.
So I always have it with me, and I feel guilty when I don't use it. Again, we've heard from a lot of you, you know, throughout this week on this issue. We heard from Martiza Martinez from Cutler Bay. She messaged us, yes, I recycle our home's paper and plastic. I don't litter so it doesn't end up in the water. I use paper bags for groceries whenever possible and avoid buying unnecessary plastic. This goes to something else, though, and I've asked the question, is can you live a plastic-free life? And I've been looking this up to try to figure it out. The straws and the plastic bags, that's one thing. And Andrew, you just told us about all the things that you see when you go cleaning up. But really, I mean, there's so many of the products we buy that we live with that are plastic.
Mm-hmm.
Can you really avoid it?
And
by the way, how much plastic free have you gotten in your life? I mean, what have you done?
I try as hard as I can. But again, I'm, you know, just as liable to forget my bag, you know, forget to put it in the car as well. But I feel like you said, there's so many different products out there. I feel like the plastic bag or the plastic straw bands are a good gateway to the issue for most people in order to get them to start thinking about how they consume plastic throughout their lives. So it's not an end-all. Like I find so much more material than just straws and bags out in the mangroves, but it's to get people, and I've become much more cognizant, obviously, since I started my work in the mangroves, of how much I use. But it gets people thinking, like, how else could I reduce my own plastic use?
There's something else too. You told me is that you'll take people out there with mm-hmm. you, and then when they see what you see,
oh yeah,
they change.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Their attitudes change. Yeah,
this is something that's very heartening because this is a problem that's largely or has been historically until recently hidden because where these materials wind up, like I've on my own have seen brown pelicans with plastic in their gullets, you know, two right next to each other within 10 feet. But most people don't see that because it's hard to get into the mangroves or to get to the other coastline ecosystems. But when you bring people out there, their eyes open up. One, because it's gorgeous. And they want to protect these resources that we have in South Florida. And two, because they see the effect that all this pollution has on such an important resource.
Let me go back to the phones again real quickly. I'm going to start with Deanna in North Miami Beach. Deanna, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. You know, I feel that incentives can help, this is incentives from businesses, can help acclimate people to the concept of not using bags. I'm visiting from New York City, and Zabar's has been offering a 5-cent credit when you don't use their bags. And I actually felt good walking out the door with whatever I had in my arms, or eventually I became converted. I really became a convert about it. It helped that I also lived in Maryland for a while, and it's the law there. And I at first I was appalled.
Yeah.
At the concept of having my conveniences taken away from me. But it was a slow acclimation, and I'm now a convert.
Deanna, thank you so much for sharing that. I really do appreciate that. Mr. Lago, this comes back to something you said. It's not always strong-arming people and businesses. Give them incentives. Have you seen companies in Coral Gables perhaps doing something like that, giving incentives? How is the government giving them the incentive?
Well, in reference to the plastic straws, we're moving in the direction of incentives, so providing some tax incentives for those restaurants. We don't just want to ban. We ban straws in public events, but in the private sector, we didn't go as far as we did in reference to plastic bags and polystyrene. One of the items that I wanted to mention, we talk about incentives and what could people do, how could they gain from not using plastic? For example, when you go to Starbucks, I have my own mug that I bought from Starbucks, and I take it with me. Every time I buy a coffee, it's 20 cents.
Right.
Think about it. You got to buy a coffee 4 or 5 times a week. You're saving almost a dollar. Over the long term, you're putting money in your pocket. And that's why I brought up the issue about solar. I know we're not talking about solar today, but I took that chance 3 years ago, and it's the amount of money that I'm saving by driving a 100% electric car. It's the same thing as plastic.
The other thing that she said real quickly is at the beginning, she felt like this is inconveniencing me, and then she got used to it.
It becomes part of your lifestyle, having the bags in your car, bringing your cup to Starbucks. And not only that, I feel great about the fact that I am investing in the future of this community.
All right, we'll take one more call here real quickly. I'm going to go to Alan in Hollywood. Alan, you have an interesting quick story for me.
Yes, I do. I'm a surfer of 55 years, and about 2 years ago, surfing with my buddies off Dania Beach, and saw something struggling in the water. So I paddled over it, and it happened to be a juvenile sea turtle. put it up on my board, and my buddies came over, and we just unwrapped all kinds of fishing line, wow, plastics, the six-pack holder plastics, and that sea turtle was so happy and just took off. Those flippers couldn't move any faster.
Well,
and we all looked at each other, and it was like the best thing in the world.
Alan, thank you so much for sharing that. Thanks for doing that. That's a great story. I appreciate it. I'm short on time. Just real quickly, Mr. Lago, what's the next thing? Plastic bags, straws, what's the next thing?
Well, right now we're fighting the third DCA because we've been appealed to the third DCA by lobbyists who want to continue using plastic bags and polystyrene in the city. But we're fighting them. We're fighting the good fight. The next thing is ensuring that people like my colleague who are here today are incentivized to go out there and continue to clean up and to stand up for environmental causes.
But as Andrew said, you know what? If it's gotten to him, it's already too late. Mm-hmm. Again, we heard from Coral Gables Vice Mayor Vince Lago and also local advocate environmentalist Andrew Ataza. Guys, thank you so much. I really appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
And listen, we'd love to hear from you. You can always find us online, WLRN Sundial, on Facebook or Twitter. And we want to know from you how you are trying to live a plastic-free life. How? What's the best way? Show the rest of us how we could do it. That's our program for this Wednesday, March 6th. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Hey, hey, hey. Hey, hey, hey.